Do you know the author?
No, I don't, and I don't know the title either. But it's a blue book, and it kind of gives the whole story, you know.
Have you a real love of books and learning?
Welcome to episode 10 of Adventures in Library Instruction. This is the, yes, it's still January 2010, we're just under the wire edition. And to my left is Anna, to my right is Rachel. Introduce yourselves.
We're going to go left first. That's me, Anna. This is Anna Vanskoyk. I am a part-time reference librarian at a county library system in the lovely state of New Jersey. And I blog occasionally at firstconclusions.com.
You guys never call me on the fact that I talk about who's sitting on my left and who's sitting on my right.
I love that you do it.
I like it.
I love
that.
We're doing this by Skype if you're just tuning in, and I give them a hard time about, no, we're going to introduce ourselves clockwise, and they've never called me on it. All right.
It paints a nice visual. I like to think that I'm sitting at a table with you guys.
I do too.
Be much cooler. My name is Rachel Borchard, and I'm the science librarian at American University, and I don't blog, but I do have Twitter, and it's Butternut Squash, and that's it.
I'm Jason Puckett in Atlanta, and I'm the communication librarian at Georgia State University, and I blog, although I've been too busy, which we'll talk about, I guess, tonight. I've been too busy to blog all month, I think, but it's at jasonpuckett.net, and I think I podcast more than I blog at this point. I think we're doing this more often than I'm posting to the blog.
Wow. You know what we've never said, like, as way of introduction?
What?
It's like our research interests. Because we keep talking about these random things that we're doing.
That's
we never
true.
Really say, yeah, who we are, for people that don't know us.
Well, I'm finishing an article up. Why don't you go, Rachel? What are your
Rachel,
research
interests? Rachel, what are your research interests?
I said that, and I was like, I don't know it there.
I'm fascinated to know.
Yeah, me too. When I figure it out, I'll let you know. I don't know. I guess I do a lot of work with technologies. IM was my big thing for a while, and library help. I like assessment, so I'm excited for next month. I'm doing a presentation about Second Life, of all things, even though I don't really use Second Life, all things instruction related, I guess. But I don't know, it's hard to define research interest. It was a bad question. I retract my question.
No,
for
but
myself, but I want to hear what you guys think.
Well, I just finished. I've finished writing, and I'm finishing the editing now, and I'm getting ready to send off an article about digital rights management. And so I'm hoping that will see the light of publication this year. We'll see about that. I've gotten really interested in open source software and open source research tools. And I did a presentation for the New Jerseyans recently about Zotero. I mean, you guys know I'm a big Zotero geek. But I've got one, I've got a presentation coming up, online webcast, for ACRL this spring, about Zotero and LibX, just as a couple of examples of open source research tools. And I have lots of opinions about why I think open source software is good for libraries. Maybe we'll talk about that on another show sometime.
Yeah, that would be a great topic. We should do that.
Yeah,
sometime.
We should do that.
Yeah, I agree. Anna?
You know, it's funny because when I was at the academic library, I definitely had two distinct, well, I guess they were interrelated. Is that redundant? They were related. One was studying library anxiety with students, how it's this sound theory where you get so, even though you know how to use the library, use the catalog, you get so overwhelmed with the process and with the technology and with the tools that you can't research properly. And it's I actually did my master's paper on a study for library anxiety, and I think it's now more kind of an information anxiety. It's morphed into that because I think sometimes it's just information overload. So I'm really interested in kind of the research behaviors, and that's kind of led into really the other, I guess the other article I've ever written. I've only written two in my life. Really looked at how do undergraduate students use tools for their research, like. What is their strategies and what are they actually doing when they come into the library? So I guess that's kind of user behavior, really, research behaviors.
Yeah.
But now I don't really know. I guess just make it through the damn day.
We all have that. I would love to talk about researching our library anxiety a little bit. That's really interesting. That kind of ties into something that happened just this evening. Here's how much I love you guys, both of our listeners at home. Here's how much how dedicated I am to this program. I worked at the reference desk until 7 o'clock tonight, came home, wolfed down dinner, and hopped right onto Skype so I could record this podcast. So I'm hot off the reference desk this evening.
Nice.
Thank you, Jason.
Love you, Jason.
Yeah, sure, you say that now. But I was, I saw our art librarian, who's I work closely with because she does performing arts as well, which is under the communication department. And so sometimes I get to work closely with her. Anyway, point is, she was leading a tour group through the library, and I was commenting on this to the guy that I was working the ref desk with, one of our awesome ref desk staff guys. And I pointed her out, and I said, she's so great. She's here in the evening, and she's always bringing tour groups through and showing stuff around. And so the art librarian dropped by the desk later on her way out, and she said, oh, these art students are so afraid of the library that I have to bring them in and show them around just to get them to come in, just so they'll have some kind of comfort level with using it. So I thought that was really interesting. It didn't really occur to me that students in different disciplines are going to have different comfort levels with the library. But it made perfect sense because, you know, they're not in college to do research, and they're not going to have a whole lot of interest in doing, not like, you know, a literature student or somebody expects to come into classes and do research. So.
Well, they probably don't have very much confidence either.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, and that's a whole nother area is when you look at research confidence versus research competency. I mean, all the studies I've seen is that students are very confident when it comes to using either a computer or research or research tools, but if they're using them to the highest effectiveness or efficiency, then that's, they usually score much lower than their confidence levels.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things we were talking about maybe discussing tonight is learning outcomes, and I'm kind of thinking, having just done just marathon teaching for the last couple of weeks. I've been thinking about this afternoon. You know, a couple of these classes I've done lately, I've just tried to cram too much in because I get lazy about the learning outcomes. And I think that it's really easy to overwhelm students with how much we need to show them. We feel like we have to show them everything.
Right.
And yeah. You know, and we just sort of overwhelm them with all the options and all the bells and whistles, and we show them more than they need to know for their one immediate upcoming assignment sometimes. And that's why they just sort of tune out and give up.
I was actually thinking about this exact thing last night. I had a research consultation that was coming in to talk about EndNote, and she'd heard about it, the new grad student, and she brought another friend of hers who was working with a professor and needed to know EndNote. And it turned into an hour and a half discussion about all things library. And we talked about all sorts of different stuff. And it morphed into an hour and a half discussion of all these different library things that they'd never known. And at the end of the hour and a half, they were like, this was fantastic. I can't believe all of this. And they were amazed that they could go for one-on-one help. And I wanted to be like, that's what we do. You know, and that's our whole goal, right?
Right.
With instruction, with consultations, with the reference stuff, is to give people information when they need it. And I was stunned that, like, somehow they had fallen through the cracks, you know, all through their undergraduate years so that they didn't know this stuff. But not only that they didn't even realize that they could ask.
Yeah.
And it just really got me thinking, of like, why are we, you know, why am I doing instruction when people, you know, when they don't need it? So, I don't know. I agree with you, Jason, I guess, is my point, that we should just be teaching to what they need to know at that point. But it seems like there's an awful lot of stuff that never gets said either. You know, like what a research library is, or, you know, even how to find call numbers and all the stuff that I think we, I don't know. I guess I'd be interested to know, like, what specific things people are getting somewhere and what they're never getting.
It's interesting because I just think about the challenge that when I was at Emory and I was the instructional services librarian there, and the challenge really was, and we never really achieved it, was setting up a tiered information literacy program where we knew all of our first-year students were going to get X, Y, and Z and hopefully walk away with that information, that competency, for it to go on to the next level. And it's difficult to do because people do fall through the cracks, and I think especially at larger institutions, and Emory isn't even, how many students are there? 10,000?
10,000 undergrads, yeah.
And even that is, that's a lot. That's right, because there's always about 1,500 incoming students each year. And trying to get all 1,500 students on that base level is hard. It's because the curriculum varies from here to there, and people, you know, opt out of classes or test out or whatever, and it's just making sure that, and then that baseline is there. And then what we tend to do is we teach the assignment, because when they contact us, it's okay, they want this assignment done, I'm going to teach to this assignment,
right?
And it's it gets very focused on the teaching and not really what do you want your students to be able to do by the time they move on to their second year or whatever. It's a challenge. And it's funny because, you know, just kind of being on Twitter and kind of seeing instruction librarians, I mean, it's something that all institutions are struggling with. And I think about when I was at University of Georgia, and that's, 40,000 students? I mean, and you're trying to get that huge first-year class all on the same page.
I guess I'm just kind of skeptical that it's possible. I mean, I'm a skeptic that it's even possible to hit, like, the entire freshman class with a library session. Just because it takes buy-in from the professors. I mean, unless you've got it institutionalized at the university level, mm-hmm. that, you know...
It takes buy-in from the administration to get it at that level. Yeah.
It's more than just getting the professors to buy in.
Right.
It's got to be institutional buy-in. And I don't know anybody, and it's not to say it's not been done, but I don't know anybody who works at such an institution.
I just remember at Immersion, I remember them saying, you can't do it all. You can't do it all, so why don't what you're going to do it well, and pick out the 2 to 3 things that you want to be able to measure. And that kind of goes into the student learning outcomes, and that's something I really tried to talk with people at Emory about, was what are the 3 things you want your students to be able to do when they walk away from this class? And it is, and granted, it's teaching to the assignment. It's not a baseline for everybody.
Right.
But I think, I just remember some of the veteran librarians are like, this is kind of nice because I'm not trying to jam everything down their throats. I'm like, you know, we put those subject guides together. I'm like, they have auxiliary materials that they can go to, you know, use that time to the 3, you know, again, 2 or 3 things that you want them to be, that you're going to know that they can do this when they walk out of the classroom. And that's where the learning outcomes really help with. Obviously, I mean, that's the first step in assessment, is coming up with your outcomes. So it was always interesting.
I'll tell you, I've got no problems with teaching to the assignment. I think that's the way you're going to learn, is if you have a project, mm-hmm. or an immediate motivator of some kind to learn these specific skills. And I have zero problem. I mean, I have problems doing it sometimes because I want to cram in more stuff, but I have no problems philosophically with teaching to the assignment.
I don't either, because they have a practical application for it. I mean, it's not this random, we're here because our professor didn't know what else to do today kind of thing.
Right.
I'm actually giving them something that they can apply to this, to their assignment that they're getting a grade on, et cetera.
Well, it's really funny. I've been, for the last 2 weeks, pretty much we just finished, I think it's week three of the semester. And pretty much since the start of week two, I've been doing nothing but teaching classes, just nonstop for 2 weeks. So today was the last of this marathon stretch of classes, and I did two today, and I'm just beat. I mean, I did some really good classes, and I did some that I felt like, oh, I wish I could have done better. But I could almost chart a progression from the very first classes that I was doing 2 weeks ago, where the students didn't have their topics yet, weren't assigned to their groups for group projects yet, up until the ones today. My last class of the afternoon today was, I think, the best class that I've done in the last 2 weeks, because I did two sections of this class, one this morning and one this afternoon. And the morning one, I just felt like they totally weren't with me. The afternoon one, I was like, okay, I can improve on that. And I pitched it to the assignment a whole lot better. And I zeroed in on their specific topics. And I said, okay, who's in group two that's doing this topic about social networking and romantic relationships? And raised their hand, okay, and let's do your search. And when I could zero in on the assignments, it just, the class went so much better. They were so much more interested. They were so much more engaged, and they had so many more questions. A couple of weeks ago, when I was doing classes, and it was so early in the semester that they didn't even have their topics chosen yet, it made such a difference. They were just sitting there and staring at me. So anyway, that's my little rant. I have more to say about that, but I'll
this is kind of, this is somewhat related, but I don't really do the, I don't do the database. I don't do databases, catalogs that much anymore. I've been doing more kind of Web 2.0 technologies.
Yeah.
And I've been doing a blogging one, like blogging for beginners or something tacky like that, because I'm not creative with titles. And I never asked before, what do you want your blog to be about? What? And granted, these are smaller. They're workshops. I mean, like 10 people max are in there. And this last one I did, I said, what is it that you want to blog about? And it was awesome, because there was this peer kind of brainstorming, well, you could do this with your blog, and you could do this with your blog, and Anna, can you show us how to do that in the blog? And I mean, it was just like, and they all walked out with like little tasks and ready to go. And I mean, because they were like, we know how to, just because I could apply it to their specific blog, what they wanted to do, what their topic was, whether it was art, selling art, or quilts. I mean, it was just amazing. I'm like, duh, like a total head-slapping moment. Ask them what they're going to be blogging about.
And, you know, to go along with that, for teaching to the assignment, we have a requirement. Like, before we'll teach, that we have to be able to look at the assignment, and it has to be an assignment. So, but it's occurring to me that when you get them after they've gotten the assignment really matters, too. And I was telling Jason earlier today that I taught two classes, and it's the same professor and a very similar assignment, but one of them was a group assignment and one was an individual assignment. And so they both classes had gotten their topics already, but with the group one, they hadn't had a chance to meet as a group yet. And I didn't realize that, and all through class, they were just giving me these looks. Like, it was one of the worst classes I've taught.
That's tough.
Because they were so unresponsive. And we ended a bit early, so I said, you know, now's a good chance to start on your research, or you can leave if you want to. You know, it's totally up to you. And most of them left. And those that stayed weren't doing research. And looking back, it's because they were still wrapping their head around the whole assignment.
Right.
They're still
coming up with their strategies, what they want to do. Yeah.
Yeah, who's going to divide up work? And it wasn't due for weeks. And so that's what I heard all of them saying. They're looking at the syllabus, and they're like, okay, what's the next assignment due for this class? And it wasn't the freaking research topic.
Oh, great, yeah. So they were completely unmotivated.
Yeah, so there was an assignment, but they could care less what I had to say.
Right.
So the second group was individuals, and they'd been told to think about their topic. And some of them had some idea, some of them had no idea. But the ones, it seemed like, so I did the same thing. We ended early, and if you want to stay, stay. If you don't, don't. The ones that stayed were the ones that had really well-defined topics already, and they found it incredibly useful. Every single one of them was so grateful for the assistance, and the other ones just walked out. And that, like, that just really told me, you know, like, it's really almost worthless to try and teach people before they're ready.
I have been, I was telling a friend at work the other day that I've been a little bit frustrated with not all of my faculty. Some of the faculty I'm working with now have been just terrific. I've had a couple of professors that I'm working with that they email me, they want to schedule a session, class session, and I say, okay, what's the assignment they're going to be working on? And they write back with these vague things, like I've had them say, oh, we just need a general orientation to library resources, or just teach them about searching, or, you know, and I've decided that next semester I'm going to actually hold these faculty hostage and not book a session until they send me a copy of the assignment, because I've been too nice about it, and I've got to just make it clear to them, look, I can't teach this class, I can't plan this class until I know what it is that the students are going to be working on. I've got to know what the assignment is. Mm-hmm. I'm doing some very different stuff this semester, actually. This has been really cool for me. You know, I have just started as communication liaison. I actually started towards the end of last semester, but all the instruction was done by that point. I did a few consultations with students and with groups, but all the teaching's done by the first half of the semester. And they're doing research after that. So I didn't really get to work with any of the professors, and I didn't get to do any of the communication instruction sessions last semester. This semester, I am getting to do all kinds of different stuff. Some of the journalism classes that I'm working with are doing some really interesting stuff. And it's been a real challenge for me, because I'm having to throw these classes together, and maybe I shouldn't use that phrase, but I'm having to plan these classes with very little lead time, just because I've had so many of them, and some of them are completely new search tools to me, or that I certainly haven't used much beyond a little bit on the reference desk. I've had a class. We've got a journalism class that's the history of news media. It's a senior level class, and they're using not just, you know, secondary sources and peer reviewed article searching, that kind of thing, like we usually do. They're using primary sources and historical newspapers and archival materials, which is most of what I've been working with before was freshman English classes, where it was, here's how to find a peer-reviewed article, here's how to search the catalog, and that was it. So I'm having all this brand new stuff. That, and I had a news writing class. This was one of my best classes this semester. We did a little bit about article searching and databases, but most of the class, or the best part of the class, I was showing them government info on websites. And we had so much fun doing that, and we were trying things live on the fly, and the professor told me that I had shown her some new stuff. I showed them, like, here's how to find your professor's salaries and all kinds of stuff, and they totally dug it. And I did – I haven't been doing enough hands-on stuff, but with this class I did a I just put together a few quick PowerPoint slides with questions on it, practice questions. And it was all stuff that I'd shown them how to do. But it was like, you know, find the salary of the GSU president for 2009, and then they'd have to go to the Georgia.gov site and find that. And, you know, what's the budget for, you know, this or that in the state of Georgia? So that was really cool. I had to teach myself all of these resources in like 2 days before the class.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, all of these, all of the last 2 weeks I've been doing classes with, if I'm lucky, 2 or 3 days prep time. So
yeah.
It's just been crazy. But I really feel like I've done some good classes, and not every class I've done has been great, but I feel like I've got a handle on the ones that didn't go terrifically well, why or what I could do better next time,
mm-hmm.
which is good. And there's one class that I've done like 5 sections of, because it's required for all of the journalism majors, and so I've gotten a little better at how to approach that class each time. And it's sort of weird, because it's more of the peer-reviewed research stuff that I figured, well, this would be a piece of cake because I've done it in so many freshman English classes, but they've all had it in their freshman English classes because we reach so many of the freshman English classes. I was like, how do I show them anything new about this? So,
there's so much, though. I mean,
I know.
There's so much.
It's just figuring out what to do with that and how to approach it. I've been doing the same classes over and over again for too long, and I'm kind of forced out of my rut this month, which has been really good for me, but
it can be such a recharge. Yeah, it can be a recharge, though, also, where it's like, oh my gosh, we get to try new things, and it's not the basics. It's not, you know, the Boolean logic over and over again. It's, well, I mean, you know, you teach that 20 million times in one semester.
Well, right. Yeah, right. And you can probably tell I'm excited about teaching this semester. I mean, I've been doing.
Oh yeah, I can hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm doing new stuff, and I'm really liking my new responsibilities in this this new liaison role. So that's really cool. Oh, I have one more of my instruction horror stories that happened this week, and then I'll shut up and let you guys talk. But this is too funny not to share on the podcast. Yesterday, and I will not name the professor's name, of course, but yesterday I went into a class, and the professor had asked me to set up this class session, and she met with me, and we talked over the assignment. She came over to my office, and we looked at the assignment. It was great. You know, it's like, oh, this is going to be terrific working with her, and it has been. But I got to class, and I got there a few minutes before her, and she came into the classroom and started loading a PowerPoint file onto the computer. I was in her classroom, and I said, oh, do you need a few minutes before I start, you know, my session to talk, you know, whatever you're doing here? Because she was clearly loading up a slideshow. And she goes, no, I want to load up this PowerPoint. And she opens it up, and it's clearly meant for me to teach from this PowerPoint. Yeah. And this was the first that I had heard about this. I had no idea what was going on or what I was supposed to be doing, but I could see down the side there were some Venn diagrams on the little preview pane in PowerPoint. I could see Venn diagrams that she clearly had this set up just for me. And I didn't really know what to do with that because I didn't even know what was in there. She hadn't said anything about that to me.
I have never heard anything like that before.
No.
And maybe I shouldn't have even said this on the podcast because I guess it's a long shot that that anybody will put this together with who it is, and I don't want to pick on this professor.
Well, what did you do?
I'll actually be teaching from the website rather than from PowerPoint. And I, you know, just as coolly and politely as possible. You know, but she had my name up on the first slide, and I was just floored. I had no idea what to do. So,
well, it sounds like you handled that very diplomatically. I mean, yeah.
That's just a hard situation.
It was just too funny for me not to share this story, and I was like, okay, she wants me to use this PowerPoint. What do I do here? Because I don't even know what's in the slides. So,
I guess the less extreme example of that is when you're like talking in the middle of that. When a professor is like, oh, can you talk about X? And I'm like, I had absolutely no intention of talking about X. You know, like this other database that you're like not that familiar with.
I'm not going into Web of Science today. I'm sorry.
I actually usually welcome that, though. I tell the professors at the start of class, if you want to throw in comments and questions as we go, I usually welcome their involvement. I've never had one totally derail me, though, like that. So
I've had it a couple times where it's just like we obviously did not communicate well beforehand, you know, because I usually make a point like, is there any specific you know, resources that you'd like me to show?
Right.
If not, you know, I'll just choose my own thing. But a couple of times they've decided mid-session, you know, like I guess they just expected that I would show something that I didn't.
Right.
That's the major thing I think of is Web of Science. I would always want, professors would always want me to show first year students Web of Science. I'm like, no. No.
They don't want this.
They don't, and they don't need it at this point. They wouldn't need it for their assignments.
Totally.
Professor, you think it's easy because you've been using it for 8 years. They don't think so.
You try explaining the journal abbreviation list.
Oh,
oh God.
It's not intuitive. I always apologize whenever I have to teach it. There's absolutely no reason why Woven Science can't do this for you. But, you know, that's just, like, in PubMed, if you type in a journal abbreviation, it automatically, like, translates to the full journal name and vice versa.
In PubMed, if you mouse over it, it shows you. Yep. If you mouse over the abbreviation now, yeah,
yes,
it shows.
But Web of Science, if you type in the full journal name, error. I had to teach both of my classes. I taught Web of Science to today because they were upper level classes, and one of them had it was the group one started with a single citation, so I figured it was a good time to show them cited reference searching, but they glared at me.
Yeah, there's always a few glarers. So.
Yeah, it was just a bad class. It was one of those where I'm, like, asking questions, you know. I was doing a sample search about blood donation, like, attitudes towards blood donation, right? So I'm like, okay, guys, so we've already been through a couple of searches, so why don't you tell me, you know, the terms that you would use if you were mm-hmm. searching them? Nothing.
Oh, God.
I'm like, okay, well, what do you guys think of blood donation? Sure. Well, what else should I put? Nothing. Oh.
That is one of the hardest things. That's one of the hardest things that I've had to learn as a teacher is when you ask them a question to stand there silently.
Exactly.
And force them to answer. Maybe I've talked about this before because this is one of my, I don't know, pet peeves, hobby horses or whatever, that I had a hard time embracing that. Shut up and let them answer the question, because once you start answering questions for them, you've lost them, because then they know that you'll answer the question
if you're enabling them.
But, you know, sometimes if they don't know the answer, waiting longer isn't going to help,
right?
You know?
No, that's true.
I just remember this one class I had in grad school. We had a guest lecture and no one had read the materials. It was a pretty small class, and she kept doing it, you know, of the uncomfortable silence to make us respond.
Right.
And there was no response coming. We're all looking at each other going, when's she going to figure this out? We have no idea. You know, so I don't know. I do bail them out after a while. Or, like, I'll try and hint.
I'll try and lead them or you know, maybe, or I start to think sometimes maybe I've phrased the question wrong or something like mm-hmm. that, you know, or phrased the question in a way that they're not getting. So
right.
I'll say, well, what if you think about it this way? What would that lead you to? But I really try to catch myself and not answer for them.
Yeah.
Have I told you guys about the GRA, the teaching assistant who brought the class in because the professor was out, and then she kept answering all the questions, and the students weren't answering them? I think she was trying to do me a favor because like it was like I would wait 5 seconds and the students wouldn't answer, and she would jump in with the answer. And I was like, no, I know you know. You're a grad student. I want them to answer because that's the only way I'm going to get them to talk to me. So I finally had to shut her up politely. I'd say, okay, let me hear from one of the students on this one.
That's
something
funny.
Like that. So, yeah. I had to find as polite a way I could to say, shut up, quit answering the questions. I'm asking your class.
Yeah, so. That's pretty funny.
I love the technique of, let's hear from someone else.
Yeah.
I have a lot of classes. Like, I think a class gets used to if one person tends to speak up, everyone just comes to accept it.
I've noticed that happening in a lot of my classes this week, where there are like two or three people who will answer all the questions. And yes. To some extent, you kind of welcome that. It's like, oh, thank God, somebody's going to talk back to me. Yeah. But, you know, you feel sort of obligated to make other people get involved in the conversation.
Yeah,
well, I try and tell myself, like, we're guest lecturers, you know? Like, it's hard for us to really establish a good rapport with all the students in
the
span 75 minutes or whatever. So, I don't know. Usually I just take it and hope that they'll ask me questions one-on-one.
There is something about just in the short time that I've been working with the communication department, there's something about having that connection to the department that seems to have made a big difference in my connecting with students, and I don't quite know what it is, because it shouldn't be any different going in for a one-shot with, you know, a group of students that have never seen me before. But yesterday I was walking by the reference desk, and somebody who was working the desk said, oh, hey, Jason, somebody, I was just helping a student with something, and they said, oh, Mr. Puckett showed us that in class the other day. And tonight when I was working the desk, I had two students come by that I had worked with in classes before, and just in the last couple of weeks. One of them came up and said, "Oh, hey, I'm in this class, and you came in and talked to us." And I went, "Oh, yeah, I remember you." And he goes, "You showed us this, and how do I do this?" So I don't know what the difference is, but maybe it's just because I'm working with higher division. You know, I'm kind of getting out of the freshman English rut, and I'm working with, you know, students that are a little more motivated because they're in their major classes. But
I was going to say they also identify you as their librarian.
Right. I hope so. Yeah. I've been making a real effort in classes to say that, you know, I am your librarian. You're going to see me in future classes. Mm-hmm. I'm here to help you in the future, even if we don't have a class together. You can meet with me or whatever.
And that's great that they do identify, because that's one of the things I always would try to tell the first years is that for each discipline, there's a special person there for you. They know all the resources inside and out. And I think, if you're at that higher level, they're going to identify more with you.
Yeah, because they've had a chance to do more research, and maybe they have a better idea that, that what we do and that we can help them.
Right.
I've actually started classes off by asking students, what do you think a university librarian does? What do I do in my job? That can be an interesting conversation starter sometimes if you're, if you've got a group that won't talk. Mm-hmm. When I'm introducing myself, I go, "So let me ask you, what is it you think I do?" And they go, "Shelf books?" I go, "No."
It is good, though, because I think one of the misconceptions that we often forget about and fail to correct is that they don't realize that we exist to help them, you know? They think that it's just, like, something we do when we have time, you know, like we're doing them a favor.
Right.
Like, the two grad students that I helped were just shocked that I would take an hour out of my time to help them. It's like, no, this is great. This is exactly why I exist,
right?
So that I can be for you.
Yeah, that's terrific. No, I was just going to say, I've been trying to be real explicit with classes about, you know, at the beginning and the end, I was like, this is my job to help you do your research. And I had a professor this week say, Jason's had been very busy and he's taking an hour out of his busy day to teach our class. And I said, well, you know, I have had a busy couple of weeks, but, you know, this is what I'm busy doing. So it's not like I'm taking time away from that. This is what I'm doing. So I thought that was kind of funny. Hey, guys, this is what I do. I come in and teach these classes. So I think I'm finally wrapping my head around the fact that the first 3 weeks of the semester I'm just not going to be able to do anything besides plan on working around teaching, because I had all these big to-do items on my list that have just not gotten done. So
I know, but it sounds like some of those really didn't need to happen at the beginning of the semester.
Probably not. I've only got a few things that have actually had to, you know, apologize at meetings for not having my work done and that sort of thing. So not too much of that, you know. So but it's okay. You know, everybody in my whole department is as busy as I am.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, is that I still don't get why all professors think, because we were just talking about how you met with some classes and they weren't at the opportune time. They didn't have their assignments or whatnot. Or maybe it was you, Rachel, that was saying that. But that always kind of drives me crazy. It's like there's this that big thing at the beginning of the semester, and it's like, okay, but they're not starting their research until April. Okay. You know, it's just interesting.
I think I told you guys I used to go into a biology class, and it was a freshman seminar, and I would go in the very first day of class. So I was literally the first person to talk to them as a college student.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and it was like, what can I possibly tell them? Like, they're so freaked out right now, you know, and I have like 10 minutes and he'd want me to cover PubMed.
Oh, my God.
We ended up, I got him eventually after the first semester. I was like, well, why don't we just talk about, like, what is science research, you know, and how does new science information come to life?
See, that's awesome, because that's kind of the theory behind information. I think that's very cool. That's another struggle, I think, is where does the – we're always looking at the specifics. When do we really talk about the big picture and how – Kim Duckett and I were actually talking about that before her interview that I did with her a couple months ago. Like, how do we fit the information flow into this conversation instead of the more practical stuff?
Yeah, it's like the whole context behind, you know,
exactly,
what are these journal
exactly
articles that
the
you're
more
finding?
Context is the perfect word. Yeah.
It's almost impossible to do in a one shot. At least, at least I've never found a good way to do it. I did get to talk about it some with that news writing class. We talked about, mm-hmm. you know, credibility yeah. of information, mm-hmm. and they really get it because these are
that's a natural fit,
you know,
yeah.
These are hopeful journalists, you know, hopeful rising young journalists, and you know they get how, you know, the credibility of information is important and everything.
And do you guys know about that? The video about, I think it's Tilt, where it's all about like the cycle of information.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've used it a few times in classes, and I'll say, you know, like, don't pay attention to the specifics because it's all about journalism. But it's really good at like how new information kind of gets disseminated and, you know, in newspapers and books and all that stuff.
Will you please link that in the show notes, Rachel? Because I'm not sure that I've actually sat down and watched it. I know about it.
But. Of course, it's very excellent. It
is. It's nicely done. Nicely done.
That's something I should be conversant with because my part of my job is still the other half of my job is still instructional technology stuff. So, I had a first actually this week. For the first time, I'm actually being invited back to a class a week after I have taught them.
Oh, that's awesome.
They had me come in and do a library session. I did two sections of this class in one day. And one section was 50 minutes, and they met three times a week. One section was 2.5 hours, and they met once a week. So the 2.5 hour class, we had a great class, actually. I was dreading it a little bit just because it was so long. But we had a terrific class, and we had time to talk and, you know, show them more of the process. And, you know, really, it was really kind of a luxury. But I got to show them Zotero. We spent about 40 minutes on Zotero. And I didn't have time to do that with the morning class. And the professor emailed me, and she said, you know, my morning class heard about this at the 50-minute class, and she said they felt a little left out because this sounded like a really cool tool, and when is this workshop? And I had mentioned that I had a workshop about it coming up, and she said, your workshop is the same time as my class, so I might cancel class and have them come to your workshop instead. And I said, no, don't do that. Why don't I just come back into your class, and I'll do a session all about Zotero? And she's like, oh, that would be awesome. So I'm actually doing two sessions with one class for the first time ever.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
Any of my instructional experiences, the best ones have been when I've been in multiple times. I mean, it just hasn't been this regurgitation of, you know, a throw up on them for 50 minutes and then never see them again. Yeah. Or they contact me and I see them that way. But that's check-in. I know. Sorry. Well, you know, I have to offend somebody along the way. That's my thing. That's my shtick for ad libbing for our podcast. Now I lost my train of thought, Jason.
Sorry.
Oh, but just that check-in point throughout the semester. I mean, and talk about that they identify with you. I mean, they totally know who you are by the end of the semester then. It's awesome. Because, again, you can't do it all in 50 minutes. I mean, you can't.
Yeah. I was going to say the times when I got to talk about the context of information and show that video was when I was coming in twice in a row. So the first time it was like set up, you know, this is what we're going to be learning about and this is why it's important. And then here's the nitty gritty.
We have our own version of Tilt and some of these other ones. It's called PORT, Psychology Online Research Tutorial, and it's set up all about all around psych info. And we've had a couple of professors, even outside of the psych department, that assign it to their classes as viewing before the actual session. And that's really cool because it gives them sort of a basis. Mm-hmm. I haven't really taken advantage of that yet. We're trying to sort of we've put together sort of a version that's not discipline specific. I don't know if the quality is as good because this PORT one that they set up before I started working there. Really, they did a great job. It's all in Flash, and it's all, you know, it's very slick and professional looking. But anyway, we do have some kind of equivalent. We're calling it the Pathfinder, which actually our Christian, who was on the show before, came up with that name, not realizing that that was sort of an old term for online research guide.
Yeah, that's funny.
And we were like, oh, hey, that works. Only librarians are going to get this.
Exactly.
He is really great to work with. Christian Sager, who was on our podcast a couple episodes back talking about public speaking. If you haven't heard the episode, he did a really good talk with me about that. He has been just terrific to work with because he works on all of our publicity and marketing materials and branding and stuff like that. And he come from a library background. And so he really gives us fresh eyes on how to approach some of this stuff. And, you know, we'll say things sometimes and he'll go, are students really going to get that? I don't even know what that means. And we'll go, oh, you're probably right. We should rethink that. So,
you know what? Anyway. That is something that they were doing at NC State with all of their contextual tutorials that they were putting together, is that the person they had helping them had no library background, you know, nor formal whatever library schooling or whatnot. And she was this great, Kim was saying, she was this great checks and balance for them, because they would start getting all jargony and she'd be like, huh? What? What are you trying to say?
I think we need more of that perspective, because
Absolutely.
It would really help us kind of hear ourselves from the student's point of view. Yeah. I mean, if we're having to explain ourselves to other colleagues, you know, God, what does an undergrad think? Or what does one of your seniors think, your senior citizens think, Anna, if we're, you know, if we're using this jargon?
Well, and that's, go ahead, Rachel.
Sorry, I was just going to. Usability testing can often, like, kind of, you know, discover problems with that.
But, usability testing?
At that point, you've already, you know, like, just getting some undergrads and being like, look at whatever this is and tell me, like, if it makes sense to you. But it's so much better when you have someone within the library, like, before you've made everything, that can just be like, no, library sex doesn't mean anything to people. Or, like, today, actually, this afternoon, we were talking about how to add our archival material into our catalog. And we had it as digital collections, and one person said, it makes so much more sense as online collections to me. And to me, like, they're the same thing, digital, online, but...
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But yeah, that's my plug for usability testing. That's exactly what it's designed to do.
I love usability
testing. Yeah.
It takes time, but it is so worth it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking maybe we're coming up on closing time here, but we had a few things that we're doing that we were going to talk about, you know, new stuff that's going on with us, and I've talked about most of mine, but maybe let's just do a quick rundown of, like, Anna, what's new with you? You've got a new project coming up, and...
Well, yeah, you know. I had, it's nothing huge. I know Rachel's been tackling some big mountains over there in, at American University. But mine basically just with these workshops I've been doing, I've had some people from some local senior centers come in, and they would like me to come over and do some guest speaking at their facilities. And I'm actually looking forward to it, because they actually have classrooms that are with computers for hands-on. Right now people have to bring their laptops to my library if they want to do hands-on with their the tools I'm covering. So I'm excited about it. The only thing is that I'm – due in 2 months, so I don't know if how much I'm really going to be able to do it at this point.
And I didn't know you were so far along.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
we should perhaps clarify what you're talking about, because you haven't actually said anything about this on the podcast.
I'm knocked up.
Yeah.
I was
keeping my mouth shut. I figured you would announce it when you were ready to announce
it. No, you don't. They don't want to know that.
Well, yeah, you may have to go on paternity leave from the podcast.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're talking about. They want me to be much more involved than I think I can be. They want me to help them revamp some of the modules that they do, and I just don't know if I have the time to do it. But hopefully, I'll get a couple of classes in before I give birth. So we'll see what happens. But it's just exciting. It's exciting that they have enjoyed the workshops I've done, and they recognize my love for teaching, and that I'd love to do it whenever I can. So we'll see what happens with it.
Now, have they been coming over to the ones that you've been doing in your library, and that's how you got the invitation to come to them?
Yeah, it's funny because I realize now that they've kind of, it's almost like they've been sending in infiltrators or something like that, just kind of coming in and doing a bunch of recon on me. It was kind of funny. They're like, well, we did this class with her, we did this class with her, and it's just kind of gotten back that they really have enjoyed what I've been doing. So
that's fantastic, though. I mean, what better compliment?
It is. It's nice. It's nice. It's nice. I don't know. I'm embarrassed. Let's move on.
Okay. Rachel, what about you? You got anything you want to talk about before we close out?
Well, I did do the presentation to faculty earlier this month.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, good and bad, I guess. We had 46 people, I think, sign up for the event, which was awesome, except that only about 18 came. So we had devoted, like, we had about a half an hour speaking time, and then we're going to devote 45 minutes to just talking with faculty and kind of, you know, hearing what they thought about information literacy and, you know, what kind of struggles they were having with, like, assignments or assessment, or, you know, anything. And about half of our audience was librarians.
Oh, yeah. So they were sold already, right?
Yeah. Which was, it was kind of helpful that they were able to provide additional information for some of the questions that people had. But, it was, you know, after a while, it was like, okay, you know, I think the five or whatever professors that are here have said about all they have to say about information literacy. So we ended up not taking it the whole time. Hmm. And, but the good thing was that two of them were deans of schools, and one of them,
he was
the very first. Yeah, one of them was the dean of SOC, I think, the School of Communications, and his first question was, do you think we should have a four-credit course for information literacy? And I thought I would say yes, and I ended up saying that I thought it would be better to integrate information literacy into other classes, because I think it's much better when you teach it with assignments, you know, that have actual topics and not,
right, instead of a separate, you know, entity. Yeah, I can, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Like, create an annotated bibliography for no purpose or create it for this other paper that you're writing, you know, that kind of thing. I thought that went really well, and I actually just got the feedback yesterday, and 12 people submitted evaluations. And 10 of them said on a scale of 1 to 5 that they were, 1, very likely to use this information in the future.
Oh, that's great.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
That's terrific, though. 10 out of 12 respondents, you said, right?
Yep. And the other two put 2s, so hey, everyone said they were likely to use it.
That's nice. Terrific.
That's awesome.
That's great.
Yeah. Better than nothing. I wish that we could sit down every faculty member and give that information to them, mm-hmm. because I think sometimes they are as clueless as students as to what we do and what information literacy is and how it can help them and it can help their students write better papers. You know, all of that stuff. It's just, we're so misunderstood.
So misunderstood.
And everybody thinks that they know what it, we do, students and faculty alike, so it's hard to get their attention. So it's a start. We'll see. For me, my next step is I'm going to be contacting the library liaisons for each of my departments just to kind of catch up and, you know, see if there's things I can do for them, but also ask about information literacy and kind of start that conversation. So, we'll see.
It's baby steps. It's baby steps. Word's going
to
get out.
It has to be.
Yeah.
That's great, though. I mean, that you had deans there from a couple
Absolutely.
Of departments, though. I mean, that could really, I mean, that's very significant, I think, that they're thinking about this. So.
Yeah. As you said, we need admin buy-in. So, you know, there's going to be change.
And that's a baby step with some steroids in it.
Yeah.
It is. No, seriously.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, what you guys were talking about, the tiered instruction, I think Anna mentioned it. That was our main pitch, you know, that we've got fairly good coverage of tier one of the basic instruction. We have very little subject specific, and it's definitely not institutionalized, so that some classes get it and some don't. But right now, we don't know that every student walking out of American University both has general information literacy and subject specific information literacy.
Right.
And that's what we need. So I'm hoping at some point we were audio taped, and it should be on iTunes U sooner or later. So when it does, I'll put a link in the show notes.
Cool.
Yeah. It was fun.
It was fun.
It was.
That's good.
It was so thrilling to hear people that aren't librarians talk about information literacy.
Yeah, no, that's another recharging experience, I think.
Yeah. Oh, and I forgot to talk about the college writing committee. Well, we can save that for some other time. But we've been trying to institutionalize, or standardize the Tier 1 instruction. We're doing some really good stuff with that. But that's ongoing, so I can report more on that later.
Yeah, I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, you know what, Rachel, let's definitely do an episode where we talk about that, because one of the things I was going to mention was that one of our library-wide goals, or department-wide goals anyway, for the Research Services Department at GSU Library is some instructional outreach to the Critical Thinking Through Writing program. And all of us are supposed to contact our departments that we're liaisons for and the professors that are teaching classes in this Critical Thinking Through Writing program. We're supposed to try and do some kind of instructional outreach, whether it's making a guide or doing a session or, you know, tutorials or something. And that's something I was going to mention, but I haven't actually done anything with yet. So maybe we can talk about those things together in a future episode.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So, I think most of the stuff that I wanted to talk about that I'm doing, I got out because I tend to sort of run over you guys and talk, but talk about what I want, you know. But
it's all about Jason.
You know, what can I say? But one really neat thing that I haven't mentioned yet is that I just found out I'm going to be teaching a continuing education class for librarians for the Simmons School of Library and Information Science with Beth Galloway, who was on, I think it was our first episode. Beth has been teaching. She went to library school at Simmons, and she's been teaching these continuing ed classes for them for a long time. And for a couple of years now, she's been bugging me to, I was trying to come up with another word, she's been bugging me to do one with her, and I've really wanted to, but I just haven't had the time or energy or whatever, and I was like, okay, yeah, this is the good time to do it. So we're going to be doing one in May, and it's going to be a four-week online class on online identity for library professionals.
Ooh, very nice. Well,
tentatively titled, They're Googling You. It's going to be about privacy and about publicity, and the students are going to learn to set up their own blog and how you can use it for self-promotion, because Beth's
very
an independent
nice.
Beth is an independent contractor, basically. She's a consultant, and so everything that she does, you know, all of her business is based on what kind of online publicity she gets, and word of mouth, and you know, and other things too. But she uses her website pretty centrally for her, you know, online self-promotion. And you know, I've ended up getting some speaking gigs and stuff like that as a result of mine. I've given a couple of small talks about, you know, online identity, and we were like, let's turn this into a class. So we're going to do that as a 4-week class for Simmons. There's nothing to link to yet, but as the spring wears on, I'll mention it again, and I'll put a link in if anybody wants to register for it. I think that'd be really cool. So,
you know, as the only one of us three that doesn't have a blog, I should take that class.
You should. You totally should. And then you should write a really good instructor evaluation afterwards and say, have this Puckett guy back.
He was the awesome.
So that's going on, and I don't think I mentioned that when we were talking about research and writing and stuff at the beginning of the hour, I forgot to mention that I don't know if it's coming out in the next issue of College and Research Libraries News. It's coming out, I think, in the March issue, which should be coming out in February. I think that's how that works. But I've got a short article about Zotero and LibX, and it's kind of a tie-in to the webcast I'm going to be doing for ACRL about open source research tools. So if you don't know anything about either one of them, and I'll link to it when it goes up. But that should be coming out soon. So
awesome.
That's cool. And Rachel and I are going to be at Computers and Libraries.
I was going to say, we need to talk about Computers and Libraries. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
I'm done.
We'll have another episode, or we'll have another couple episodes between now and then, but we found out that we're... I'm sorry, Rachel, you tell.
Okay. We are going to be presenting at Computers and Libraries, which is beginning of April. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, mid-April. Yeah, mid-April.
And we're going to be talking about podcasts. Woohoo! And I think we're sharing the session with someone about blogs.
So yeah.
It's like podcasts, blogs, and more, or something like that.
You know, I really love podcasts, but I'm going to not submit any more conference proposals about them because I will have said all I need to say about it. After this session at Computers and Libraries, I will have said all I need to say about podcasting for librarians. So I want to do some other stuff. I want to do a session on Zotero and LibX. And anyway. So thank you all for listening. We'll catch you in a few weeks. Coming up next month, we think we have a special guest, and we're going to do an episode about assessment.
Woo-hoo!
So come back in a few weeks. Adventures in Library Instruction is produced by Rachel Borcher, Jason Puckett, and Anna Van Skoik. It's released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License. To subscribe, go to our website at adlibinstruction.blogspot.com. Leave comments and suggestions on the blog or email us at adlibinstruction@gmail.com. Our opening theme song is Dropping Out of School by Brad Sucks, and our closing theme is Higher Education by the Napoleon Bonapartes. Both are available at magnatune.com.
Contact the library schools and the American Library Association. They are able to give you valuable advice.